We all know your time is valuable. Whether you're hyper-focused on admin tasks like notes and billing, or simply trying to make a cup of coffee, or even run to the bathroom in between appointments, constant interruptions can derail your day. This podcast is sponsored by The Receptionist for iPad, a digital check-in system that eliminates the need to walk back and forth from your office to the waiting room to see if your next appointment has arrived. Clients can securely check in for their appointments, and you'll be immediately notified by text, email, or your preferred channel. Break free from interruptions and make the most of your time. I've been using them for almost 3 years now, and it saves me hours in my week. Start a 14-day free trial of The Receptionist for iPad by going to thereceptionist.com/private practice. Make sure to start your trial with that link, and you'll also get your first month free if you decide to sign up.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the All Things Private Practice podcast, joined today by Danny Biondini, who is a licensed marriage and family therapist, born and raised in San Francisco and now living in Brooklyn. They served as a core faculty and department chair of a graduate program for MFT students and as an adjunct professor at the University of San Francisco, the San Francisco Center for Psychoanalysis, and Brooklyn College. Now, they primarily work as a family therapist in their private practice, Gemini Family Therapy, helping adult families in California and New York repair from past hurts or estrangement. They are also launching an online program that teaches theories and tools around how to repair from family estrangement. The program is called Prepare to Repair. Danny, buongiorno. Welcome to the show.
Hello, buongiorno. Thank you.
I still think about that every day of my life. So Danny was at my Italy summit back in September of last year and rushed onto the bus the day everyone was leaving at like 5 a.m. and apparently was like, oh, this is not the story. Go ahead, do tell.
No, that's the story. Yeah. Well, okay. First I slept through it and someone had to go back and rouse me from sleep.
Well, I was anxious that everyone's getting on the bus and making sure everyone gets out of this village that's 4 hours from the nearest airport. I see Danny's missing. We don't know where Danny is. And then Shailene messaged me, Danny's on the bus. They came on and were like, hi, bonjour.
Apparently I'm very chipper and cheery at 5 a.m. I'm surprised at all times.
Unless you're like angrily riding your bike in New York City and you're like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, exactly. Unless somebody steps in front of my bike, then I am a different person.
And Dennis comes out.
Yeah.
Okay. Regrouping for y'all. So today we are going to talk about how to move into becoming a professor and how to supplement your income by doing so. Because I know a lot of you listening are like, I do want alternative income streams. I want to do different things with my career. And I think it's a really wonderful path and one that you have experience with and want to share that. So tell us a little bit about why this feels like an important topic.
Yeah, well, you said it, and I'll just reiterate it, that I know a lot of therapists are very interested in figuring out if they can and how can they get into teaching as a side gig. Yeah. Actually, a few years ago, I'd posted in a Facebook group for therapists, and I asked, is anybody in here interested if I was going to do a workshop on how to get into teaching? And I had like 400 people respond affirmatively. Never put it together, but this is my opportunity. This is for them.
This is accountability.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I mean, I think we go through seasons of life as small business owners, and it sounds like right now, this season of life, you feel really passionate about this. So you've been a professor as an adjunct professor for different colleges and a part of different programs.
Yeah.
Tell us about like, what do you really like about that to offset doing family and one-on-one therapy?
Well, I've always been, I think like you and like everyone we know, always been very interested in having my attention scattered in a few different places.
Sure.
And so I think that teaching is one really awesome way to have a side gig where you're really doing a lot of the same kinds of stuff that all the people we know who are like therapist entrepreneurs, like all that kind of stuff they're doing, like doing talks and making content and filming videos and making funny memes or whatever. But as a professor, you're doing it with more of a safety net because, right. Yeah, you don't have to find the audience. Like they will bring the students to you.
Sure.
And there's just more support and more structure already in place. I think it's a good like first step.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think a lot of people will be interested in that. And I think a lot of people will get hung up on like, can I be an adjunct professor with just a master's degree?
Yes, very common question. So let's dispel that myth right now. The answer is yes. You absolutely can get hired to teach at the graduate level with a master's degree. I only have a master's degree. And I have been an adjunct at multiple schools. I was also core faculty and the department chair even, which was weird in retrospect and a mistake. But
a red flag in some ways, yeah.
What?
Was it a red flag in some ways?
We won't go down that path, but yeah.
Sure.
But you absolutely can teach with just a master's degree. But that is to say, not at every school. Some schools will have a stricter standard and want doctorate level. But there's plenty of programs that are happy to have you with a master's degree and with clinical experience in the field.
Sure. I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I can remember like having professors for sure that did adjunct work who had master's degrees in my program. And I really enjoyed a lot of them. And I never really thought about like doctoral versus master's in that capacity.
Yeah.
With that being said, one thing that's always held me up, right? Like, cause I've been like, oh, I might be interested in teaching in some capacity is like the executive functioning piece of like the syllabus, all the administrative work that goes into it. So you are a fellow, I guess I can say ADHDer if you feel comfortable with that. If not, we'll remove it.
No, it's okay.
How do you manage that? Because I don't know if I could. Like the executive functioning piece, the administration piece, the behind the scenes stuff.
Okay, you are going there. You are going to the heart of it. That's the hardest part of it. For me, it was the hardest part of it. I'll say I taught for maybe, 5 or 6 years before I even knew I was ADHD or before I even got my ADHD diagnosis. And I struggled with all of those pieces that you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's actually funny. After I got my ADHD diagnosis, I was at the school and I saw one of my former students who also worked in administration there. And I was like, oh my gosh, guess what? I just found out I have ADHD. And his response was, yeah, we all knew that.
Like, yeah.
You would show up to classes with 100 slides in your PowerPoint for a 1 hour lecture just so you could jump around to whatever, you know, seemed most interesting at that moment.
Sure. That makes sense. I actually would love to know what like pre-discovery Danny was like, the masked version of Danny. I find that to be fascinating.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You don't have to answer that, but I was just thinking about it.
I have to think about it for a moment because
okay.
I think I was pretty similar to how I present now. Like I do have very, very big energy and I'm enthusiastic about everything. But I also, you know, I would get a lot of feedback though, that I was also like very disorganized and like sometimes sort of like chaotically so. And I, as a professor, I mean, I think that there's the ADHD part of me that's like, I just want to like have fun with my lectures and I'm going to make all kinds of like really funny memes and jokes throughout my lectures. And I was really good at that kind of thing.
Sure.
And also just like following somebody's tangent, like to the ends of the earth, which was also feedback I would get. And I learned, okay, got to reel that in. And on that, like how I learned to reel it in was like to come to class with a very strong structured syllabus and a very structured PowerPoint, like slideshow, whatever you want to call it,
right?
That would keep me on track.
Sure.
Besides the ADHD part of me, I think there's also what I've come to realize is my more autistic side too, which is like, I want to deeply research my special interest and talk about it in depth for like the entire 3 hours.
Sure.
So like, I'm not going to come and just do like a surface level lecture. Like, we are going to go as deep as possible into this.
Hard to do in an hour sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why like my classes would often just be so packed with like my psychopathology class was like, we are going to examine every diagnosis, every disorder from four different lenses.
Sure.
And we're going to critique the DSM from a historical perspective and talk about the rise of the biomedical model and look at alternative frameworks and look at trauma and like so on and so on.
Sure.
And I think people kind of did come out of my classes like in like a swirl, like what was that like whirlwind, like tornado that just hit.
Mm-hmm. So that's, I mean, I can see that in some aspects for sure. And I'm sure some people also really enjoyed like the passion that you brought to the classroom.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I would get a lot of positive feedback about my enthusiasm, my passion, like my clear like love for the topics and my knowledge is sure. Really deep.
Yeah.
But I'd also get feedback, like literally, like I had students that were like, Danny, like you're too much. And like the way you approach this material, like it's too much. It's too fast. It's too deep. You know.
So how do you find the balance in that?
Oh, yeah.
Or is that still searching for?
Well, I think still the search. You know, I'm still now putting together courses. I'm creating my online course right now that's separate from any institutions.
Right.
I have that same balance where I have that same struggle where I'm like, sure. I'm teaching about it, repairing family estrangement. But first, like I have personally read about like every single book on estrangement, which is not that many. So it's not that a lot, but it's like a dozen, let's say, every journal article I could find. And I am now going to give you the entire history, every theory, every person who has ever said anything on this topic. Mm-hmm. And I'm realizing, dude, that's not what people actually want. They just want to come in and have me say like, there is hope, you can repair. Here are some basic skills and tools.
Yep. I agree. And I think that there's probably a way to strike that balance between like passion and deep interest in research, right? And like deep diving it. And maybe that can be like an offshoot of the course of like, hey, if you want to dive deeper and really go into the research and have these deep analytical philosophical conversations, like here's this track and here's the track where it's like, here's the hope and the optimism and the support.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's one of the things I really loved about teaching. And like I loved teaching. I adored it because I would get to have those deeper moments with my students when I would read their papers and respond to their papers or read their Canvas posts, you know, on our, you know, their online posts. And like really be able to track their thinking and respond to their thinking. And I would do that hours every day. Not that I had to, just because I wanted to. Like I loved it so much.
And now we are going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Alma. When I first decided to go in network with insurance, I found the whole process overwhelming. I can actually remember a couple of days that made me want to cry, where I spent hours on the phone being transferred or hung up on, or not giving clear answers or instructions. I knew I needed to get paid, and I also knew that I didn't know if I could do this by myself. If you're running into those same challenges, Alma can help. They made it easy to get credentialed a lot faster, handled all of the paperwork, and offered way better rates than I could have gotten on my own. They also make sure I get reimbursed within 2 weeks of every session so that I know when I'm getting paid. Visit helloalma.com/ATPP to learn more. That's helloalma.com/ATPP. Hey everyone, it's Patrick with All Things Private Practice, and I just want to invite you to join us in Scotland for our second Doubt Yourself, Do It Anyway Summit that's happening July 14th to the 17th of 2025. We have 12 amazing speakers, 12 MBC CEs available in Edinburgh, Scotland, which is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my life. The link is in my show notes and on my website at allthingspractice.com. You can also join us in Greece in September if you're a leader or wanting to start a group practice. We have a leadership retreat happening on the island of Crete from September 6th to the 11th. Honestly, one of the most beautiful villages I've ever been to in Hania. And then in 2026, we have limited spots available in two different New Zealand retreats. One is for neurodivergent entrepreneurs, March 1st to the 8th of 2026. And then beyond private practice, moving beyond one-on-one therapy, creating alternative streams of income. That's March 15th to the 22nd, 2026 in Queenstown, New Zealand. Check the links. Doubt yourself. Do it anyway.
That makes sense. Yeah, that you were that passionate about it. And I'm sure the students really, really appreciated that. So how does someone get started with this process? If they're like, okay, I do want to teach. I do want to do some adjunct. I want to supplement my income. I want to do something different with my brain. How do you get started with this?
Yes, well, you would be starting out looking for adjunct positions, and they have them in every master's level graduate program in the country. They hire adjuncts to teach, you know, at least some, if not most, of their classes.
Right.
And what I did, and what a lot of people I know, to get our foot in the door, just go back to the graduate school you went to,
right?
Because you probably still have connections there. There's probably professors who know you, and talk to them and say, you know, I'm really interested in teaching. And like, well, how it worked for me was the former chair of my program said, oh, great. You know, we have a human development class. We'd love, you want to teach it? And I said, yeah, of course I do. So that's a good place to start. You also can, I mean, if you really were bold, you know, just look up all the grad programs that are in your locale, and really could just probably reach out, look them up online, find out who the chair is, send an email saying, I really want to teach. Like, here are my interests. Here's my subject. Like, not just like, I'll talk about this in a moment, but it's important to not just have like vague interest and like, oh, I would love to teach, but like, you need to have subject matters you're interested in and capable of teaching.
For sure. That makes a ton of sense. Instead of being vague, and instead of like, if you're going to take that approach, I imagine, don't just like throw out the same email to every single person you reach out to. Be really specific about why you want to work at this institution, what you want to teach, what you feel passionate about, and what you feel like you would bring to the table.
Yeah, I mean, that would be ideal. Yeah, if you did all that. But also, like, I was in the position of chair, like hiring adjuncts, and I will tell you, behind the scenes, we were pretty desperate to hire. Sure. Like, it's actually very hard to find therapists who want to adjunct. I think in part because a lot of people just feel like, oh, that's not for me. I could never do that. I don't know enough.
Right.
And also in part because, let's be real, this is another thing we've got to talk about.
The pay.
Yeah. The pay is not good. you don't do this like, to make a ton of money. You really do it because you love it. And, or, you know, it's interesting to you. You want an opportunity to be creative in this way. I think some people also do it for the status. Like, it's like there's some, this is a very neurotypical thing that I don't understand personally, but
sure.
I think it's, there's like a status associated to being
that I'm a professor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that probably tracks. I also cannot relate to that.
Yeah.
Like, openly share that often. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you touched on the pay because I was definitely going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
And I guess another question people might be having is, can an adjunct, and it sounds like it can already based on you becoming a faculty chair, but can an adjunct lead to like a permanent tenured position or a permanent position?
Yeah, it can. In my experience at the schools I've been at, that's much more likely going to go to somebody with a doctorate, but it's clearly not always the case. It depends on the school. I mean, I taught at a school that was very anti-establishment. Like, we don't care about credentials or accreditation or any of that. I mean, of course they had like the basic ones you need to have. Okay, don't sue me. But, you know, they otherwise, like, they didn't care so much about that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think that makes sense. Like, that not every institution in this country is going to be the same and have the same like concerns about maybe bureaucracy or like doing things a certain way.
Yeah.
And that I like that you just switched drink types.
I was going to tell you at the beginning, I do have three drinks here.
Good. So I'm glad to hear. What do we have in front of us? We have an iced coffee or something, and we have...
This is my cold brew from this morning.
Okay, probably something carbonated somewhere.
You know, I don't have any carbonated right now.
Mm.
I have really let everybody down in my community. but I do have three. This one is just water. Mm-hmm. And in the cat mug, we have a milky oolong tea.
Love it. I love it. I noticed it as soon as you put your water down. So, okay. I think we covered like the foundation. What else did you have on your list?
Oh yeah, wait, let me tell you actually how much that you do get paid.
Sure.
I want to give the range that I've seen, which is at the low end, maybe 3,000, and at the high end
for a semester.
For one semester class. Yeah.
Yep.
3,000 on the low end and maybe 6,000 on the high end.
Sure. And I know that a lot of adjunct professors sometimes often like piece it together by teaching like multiple classes or once they get established.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And I mean, the thing is, once you get your foot in the door, if you do a good job and they like you, I promise you they will offer you more classes.
Right.
Because like I said, like it's actually pretty hard to hire good people.
Oh, I'm sure. And I'm sure what happens too is like, once you get your foot in the door, you establish yourself, you do a good job. It's like, this is so much less of a path of least resistance opposed to like hiring new people, going through that process, trying to figure out if it's a good fit. So that makes a ton of sense to me.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So you can definitely piece it together with, you know, teaching a couple classes at the same school or, you know, moving it around.
I like that. And I think flexibility, you know, is what people want. And I know for a lot of us, especially those of us who do identify as neurodivergent, especially probably the more the ADHD side, doing the same thing for the rest of our lives in a career seems pretty hellacious.
Yeah. Yeah. I could never imagine that. And I mean, that's really why I wanted to teach initially is, I mean, I already was a therapist. I was already a program director at the agency I worked at. Then I had a private practice. And then I was like, yeah, now add teaching. to be fair, like if there are any of my former students who listen to this and they're like, yeah, dude, that's part of the problem though, is that you were doing like five things at once. I understand that now.
Sure.
I did not understand that then.
I think there's refinement too, though, in that process. Like I bet if you went back to teaching now, things could look a little bit different in regards to like how many things you take on. And how much you have capacity for.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. I would not do it the way I did it before.
I think that's a good growth lesson. I mean, honestly, and I think for those of you listening, like probably relatable in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. I mean, Patrick, for you, this it's a lesson.
It's a constant lesson, and it's a constant like check and balance, unfortunately, but like just trying to honor for those of us who have diminished and limited capacity, like where do we put our energy? How do we pace? How do we like protect our spoons? How do we like set boundaries? How do we not say yes to every idea and opportunity? And I've gotten a lot better at it, but it's still a challenge. And I think it's about it just acknowledging that it's a growth point and not just like, it's not a finite point either.
Yeah. Well,
anything else that you want to add for those that are listening about any of this?
Yeah. Let me see. How much time do we have?
A couple minutes.
We'll
probably get wrapped up.
So I'm going to just go back to my notes to make sure I cover everything.
Sure.
So I did want to come back to a point we briefly touched on, which is that when I would talk to people who wanted to teach in my program, in our program, a lot of them would, I'd say like, okay, yeah, what are you interested in teaching? And they would say things like, oh, well, I really want to teach the supervision or like clinical skills. And I was kind of like, that's not really how it works. Like most programs do have some version of supervision, but that's probably already taken by the core faculty because it's a really easy gig and they just want that. They've already claimed it.
Of course.
I think you have to be prepared to really teach subject matter.
Right.
And look, so what I would recommend is that you look up, you know, what are the common classes taught at the master's level? And it's going to be some version of all the same things like human development, psychopathology, research methods, law and ethics, child therapy, couples therapy, multicultural counseling, and then figure out like where your interests as a therapist align.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. Instead of just going for like the core classes that are obviously going to be taken, being much more specific and probably somewhat flexible in terms of like, what am I willing to teach and what am I going to be interested in, especially at first?
Exactly. And I think you need to do, it helps a lot if you do that work ahead of time and present yourself to the person hiring as, you know, I am a therapist. I have all this, you know, like what I did was like, I have all this experience as a school-based therapist working in high schools in San Francisco, and I've trained in child psychoanalysis. So given all of that, I feel qualified to teach a human development class.
Right.
Because I have the clinical experience and the theoretical knowledge to teach about development.
Sure. That makes great sense. And I think for those of you listening, like trying to embrace that if this is something that you want to embark upon, because it does sound like a great income stream and also just a great way to use creativity and connection and just a different part of the brain. Because again, the monotony of session after session to me sounds like absolute tedium, and I don't think I could ever do it again.
No. I mean, this is the first time in my life that I've really only been doing my private practice, but that's just because I burnt out so deeply that I've been in recovery from it.
But
otherwise, like I'd still be teaching because like I said, I think it's so rewarding, both like as a neurodivergent person, like it just like scratches that itch in my brain for like, I want to constantly be learning and talking about ideas with people.
That makes so much sense. I'm glad that you named that. If the audience wants to find you and connect and take this program that you're creating, how do they do that?
Okay. You can find me on Instagram as Gemini Family Therapy. That's it. I mean, or go to my website, sign up for my email list.
Yes, what is that?
GeminiFamilyTherapy.com.
Perfect. And we'll put that in the show notes so that you have access to it for those of you who are listening and interested in connecting with Danny. Danny, it's always a pleasure. I hope, you know, the rest of the day is fun, full of bike riding and multiple drinks.
Thank you so much. Okay, bye, Patrick.
Thanks for coming on. And to everyone listening to the All Things Private Practice podcast, new episodes are out on Saturdays on all major platforms. Like, download, subscribe, and share. Doubt yourself. Do it anyway. And we'll see you next week.